So, I think this is another one of those weeks where our normal funny, witty intros just aren't going to work. It has been a really tough week here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, I mean, there's just been nothing funny about this week, you know, from the Sunday shooting of Jacob Blake by police to the unrest that followed as we watched Kenosha burn, to the fatal shooting of two protesters on Tuesday. It's just been a horrible string of days.
And there's been a lot of intensity, too, in how politicians are talking about all of this and the disagreements that they've had over things like, you know, the statements that come out right after a shooting like this, to how law enforcement should be involved in protests, and also how policy discussions and changes should work moving forward.
Well, I guess let's just jump into it. This is the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm John K. Wilson.
I'm Sean Johnson.
And I'm Laurel White.
This week, the shooting of Jacob Blake and its aftermath in Wisconsin. So there's a lot to talk about this week, but before maybe jumping into the sort of political angle of it, do we want to just give a quick rundown of the news that happened this week in Kenosha?
I think it's a good idea. I mean, I think, you know, it's tempting to just say everybody's been following the news this week. You all know what's going on, so let's get into the reaction. On the other hand, it has been kind of a blur how much has happened this week. Mm-hmm. So I think we are going to do like a kind of a quick rundown of the week's events to start things off. And, you know, I guess that starts with Sunday and the police shooting of Jacob Blake in Kenosha. We got some details on that from the Department of Justice, the Department of Criminal Investigation, which is under the Department of Justice, handles these investigations. And so, you know, we kind of know that at around 5:15 on Sunday is when this started. Police were responding to a call from a woman who said that, you know, her boyfriend was at this residence in Kenosha and wasn't supposed to be there. They show up, and this widely circulated video, which has been on social media, shows one of the officers shooting Jacob Blake in the back as he is entering his car. I mean, we also know from the DOJ, they're saying that the two officers involved unsuccessfully deployed their tasers. We don't really know what that means, but essentially the two officers involved did try to deploy their tasers before one of them shot Jacob Blake in the back. Jacob Blake is likely paralyzed for the rest of his life, according to his attorneys. He's in the hospital recovering from multiple surgeries, and according to his family, he is handcuffed to the hospital bed as we record this on Friday. So, I mean, that was the events of Sunday that led all this off, right?
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, Sunday night was the first night of protests in Kenosha. We've seen those continue this week there and across the state, but of course, really, you know, centralized and focused in Kenosha. The intensity of the protests there was particularly strong, you know, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. The extent of the fire damage in the city is something that we haven't seen in other protests in 2020. We've seen a lot of unrest in 2020, obviously. And what it looked like in Kenosha this week, I think it's safe to say, was a departure from what we've seen in other instances in Wisconsin this year.
Yeah, I mean, when you've seen protests elsewhere in Wisconsin, we have seen, you know, we're kind of getting used to it now, the broken glass in Madison, on storefronts in Madison. You've seen statues toppled in Madison. But we hadn't seen fire like we have in Kenosha this week. And that started on a Sunday night a little bit as demonstrators burned city trucks. But Monday night was especially brutal for this section of Kenosha, where businesses were burned all over this portion of the downtown. And you know, if you go around Kenosha now, you'll see piles of rubble here and there, which used to be buildings. And as recently as a few days ago, there were buildings that were kind of still smoldering. There are used car lots that have where all the cars are torched. It is visually a shocking place right now in Kenosha, and a lot of that fire damage happened on Monday.
So if we want to kind of talk about how the protests have evolved kind of alongside how the political conversations have evolved, Monday was a pretty important day in terms of kind of the political response to all of this. That was the day that Governor Tony Evers called a special session of the legislature for next week, and we're going to get more into that later, about police training requirements and some other state laws that have to do with police. We also saw the governor on Monday deploy the National Guard to Kenosha. He authorized on Monday 125 troops to go to Kenosha, and that was kind of the beginning of a big conversation that we would have throughout the rest of the week about the National Guard and law enforcement and what law enforcement looked like at the protests.
And so that brings us to Tuesday, which was probably one of the most consequential nights this week that we've seen.
Yeah, Tuesday you had a massive police force in Kenosha. By that time, there's this big steel fence that's going around this huge block in the city of Kenosha there around the courthouse. And you have more National Guard troops in the city, and you have this very, I don't know, aggressive confrontation between police and protesters in this park in the downtown. And protesters are shooting off fireworks toward police. Police are shooting off pepper spray and tear gas at protesters. Police with these big military vehicles kind of driving the protest crowd out of the park eventually and driving them down the street where the demonstrators have this violent confrontation with a number of men who were there with long guns, who said they were there to guard property. They were, you know, in some cases, self-described militia. And one of those men with the long guns, based on a kind of a combination here of a criminal complaint and a variety of videos which are posted online, appears to be Kyle Rittenhouse. He's a 17-year-old from Illinois who has now been charged with murder in Kenosha County. It appears in these videos that Kyle Rittenhouse, in a confrontation with one of the protesters, shoots him in the head. That man dies. The person who appears to be Kyle Rittenhouse is then chased by protesters. And in this video, you can see this person turn around and shoot multiple people who are chasing him, wounding one in the arm, killing another. And he then stands up and walks toward police with his hands in the air. He's not arrested. They tell him to leave the area. He is arrested the next day in Illinois. And as I mentioned, he has since been charged with murder in Kenosha County.
And so then by Wednesday, there were more guard troops deployed and continued protests, but things seemed to calm down in terms of the intensity of the protesting.
Yeah, although I think it was partially because of a decision police made not to enforce the curfew directly around the protest that night. So like downtown in Kenosha that night, at around 7 o'clock, this police vehicle, it's a military vehicle that is owned by Kenosha police, rolls up into the park, which is very quiet at that point. And the police just kind of...
Wednesday, you were out there, right?
I was out there.
So you saw this firsthand.
I did. And you know, headed into Wednesday, we didn't know... I mean, Tuesday was so horrible. It was just kind of like, what's Wednesday going to bring? And so it's very quiet in the park, and this police vehicle rolls up. And it seems like they just kind of like check out the crowd, and then they left. And for hours later that night, I was following this crowd as it marched around the city. Police kept their distance. I mean, you would see a police car every so often, but they'd be off in the distance mostly. So you didn't have the same situation that you'd had the previous few nights. We do know now that there were arrests going on that night for violation of curfew. They were just happening elsewhere, you know, where police would pull up on a vehicle. There's a video that was posted by activists showing police pulling up and arresting some people in a van. They smashed out the window. These were unmarked vehicles when they pulled up. And so arrests are still happening. It's just different than it was. And it's, you know, that the protest was not creating property destruction in the way that it did on Sunday, Monday, and it didn't turn violent in the way that it did on Tuesday.
So that's sort of the play-by-play in terms of what happened over most of the week. Do we want to sort of switch gears to talk about the larger political picture of what happened?
Yeah, I think there's a lot to talk about. And before we do, I guess I would just sort of frame it this way. You know, we talk a lot on this podcast, because this is Wisconsin politics, basically, about the conflict between Governor Tony Evers, a Democrat, and the state legislature, which is run by Republicans. And they disagree a lot. And, you know, this year with COVID-19, they have disagreed a lot. And so we now have this other crisis that is specific to Wisconsin. And I think it'd be fair for the average person to wonder what kind of behavior will this lead to in this normally divided government? Is this the kind of thing that will kind of bring people together, or is it the kind of thing that will exacerbate these divisions? And I think it's pretty clearly the latter, because some of what you've heard from Evers and from Republicans and from other Democrats has been just pretty heated this week, and I feel like that's putting it mildly.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that the very beginning that we could talk about where, you know, one conflict started was just from absolutely square one, which is the statements that the governor and lawmakers issue when they first find out about things like this, when they first found out about the Jacob Blake shooting. How did they sort of communicate with their constituents? How did they frame it for people? And in the governor's case, he put out a statement at about 10:30 on Sunday night. And he said that, you know, he kind of laid out the facts a little bit. And then he said that his wife, Kathy, and he, you know, are hoping for, you know, Mr. Blake's recovery. And then he says, just in the second sentence of the statement, "While we do not have all of the details yet, what we know for certain is that he is not the first Black man or person to have been shot or injured or mercilessly killed at the hands of individuals in law enforcement in our state or our country." So I kind of pull that part out because that was one of the points of criticism that Republicans kind of got to about the governor's statement, saying that he got kind of too critical too quickly, and that his language was, in their opinion, kind of inflammatory and encouraged people to be upset, to be angry, to kind of to go out and protest in a way that was, you know, maybe more destructive or to have a feeling about this that Republicans didn't necessarily think was warranted. To kind of contrast what the governor said with what Republicans said, I'm going to pick out Assembly Speaker Robin Voss's statement. I think it's pretty exemplary of what some other Republicans in Wisconsin said. And also, of course, he's a very powerful Republican in Wisconsin. So this is what Voss's statement, which came out on Monday, so several hours after the governor's statement, obviously, he offers a similar sentiment up top, saying that he hopes Jacob Blake and his family are doing well. He hopes for Jacob Blake's recovery. And then his next sentence after that is, quote, "It's essential that we get a complete picture of what happened. I would ask that the Wisconsin Department of Justice Division of Criminal Investigation meet its goal of completing a thorough investigation in 30 days. He kind of continues from there and then ends the thought with, quote, "Before passing judgment, we have to know if the shocking 20-second video clip shared with the media tells the whole story." So I think this is just really, it exemplifies the difference in how Democrats and Republicans in Wisconsin framed the shooting and were talking about the shooting from the very beginning. Democrats kind of talking about, you know, this is a tragedy. This is an example of violence against Black people that we have seen across the country. And Republicans kind of saying, you know, we can't rush to judgment on this. We really need to take our time. And so just kind of this very, what you might think is a fundamental sort of baseline thing, set off a debate that continued throughout the week. You know, I think there were obviously other things that came up, and we'll talk about that. But there was a continual reference by Republicans to frustration that they felt with the governor for, in their estimation, kind of inflaming tensions and making people more upset than maybe they would have been otherwise.
And that has not changed. There was no like, whoops, we got too dug in there to start with. It's just kind of, I'm trying not to use the word inflamed this week because of what happened in Kenosha. It just feels like way too close to home, I guess. But if you just, you know, look at what the governor has said about criticisms that they went too far in that opening statement. He says, look, we're just going to have to agree to disagree here. All I did was state facts, and I don't think there's anything wrong with stating facts. And then later in the week, you know, Speaker Voss is saying that the governor is responsible for the deaths of the protesters, but for not calling in more National Guard. And what was State Senator LaTanya Johnson's statement, Laurel, that you noticed that was the strongest statement you had ever seen from a state legislator? Here's a little heads up. We can't read the verbatim quote for this podcast.
We cannot. So her statement was essentially about the frustration that she was feeling that Republicans weren't amenable to convening a session to talk about policy proposals related to police in Wisconsin. And I think that the kicker in her statement was, when I get to the part, I'll just do what I need to do. But she said, the question, quote, "The question for us, Wisconsin, is when are we going to make Republicans do their jobs? Or do we continue to sit idly by and watch the state burn to the something ground?"
If you would like the full quote, you can read Laurel's Twitter feed.
I did tweet. I tweeted the word. I don't know if that's
because it would feel funny to be like, to not tweet the F word in a direct quote would feel just sort of funny in Twitter, given the world that is Twitter.
Right.
But so there you go. That is Wisconsin politics today at this kind of crucial moment. It is as divided as ever. And it's election season, which doesn't tend to calm things down.
Yeah. I mean, Sean, you mentioned there about how Speaker Voss's comment about the governor being responsible for the two deaths that happened in Kenosha on Tuesday night. That was really kind of, for me, the number two kind of big political debate that happened after kind of the controversy about the statements, which was like this really high profile disagreement between Evers and Republicans about the National Guard and accepting federal law enforcement support. And this is not a new debate for us. This is something that Republicans and Democrats didn't agree on during the George Floyd protests. So it's not new territory, but I think it was definitely more, it was heightened. I mean, the speaker's comments were incredibly impassioned, I think maybe is a good word to use. And that was something that, you know, members of Wisconsin's congressional delegation got on board with, and certainly members of the state legislature being really sharply critical of the governor for not sending more National Guard troops or accepting the Trump administration's first offer of additional support from the Department of Homeland Security.
So just to clarify, where do things stand currently in terms of the level of National Guard presence and law enforcement presence in Kenosha?
So I think as far as we know, as we're recording this podcast, the governor has authorized up to 500 members of the National Guard to assist police in Kenosha. We haven't heard any other number besides 500. We did hear the governor say later this week that the National Guard were being brought in from Arizona, Alabama, and Michigan to assist with the Wisconsin National Guard. But he emphasized that they would be under the command of the state National Guard while they're here, that they're not federal troops, and that the Wisconsin National Guard is in charge. And every time you hear Wisconsin Adjutant General Paul Knapp talk about what they're doing there, he's like, hey, look, we're just your neighbors. We're here to assist. They kind of downplay it all the time. And I mean, there's a political element to this too, because you know, the president stepped in and said, I would like to send you more National Guard. I'd like to send you as many troops as you want, basically. There's a lot of angling going on here. Did we mention that there's an election coming up and that this is like one of the issues that Republicans are highlighting? The president is really trying to run on this law and order platform and align Democrats with, you know, places like Kenosha and images of the city burning. And so, there's a political element to everything everybody's saying here. Evers wants to come down, I guess, hard enough on unrest in Kenosha without looking like he's too aligned with the president. And you know, also you have seen in other cities, Portland, I guess, is the city that comes to mind, that when federal agents showed up, the temperature got turned up a bit. You know, it seemed to provoke a little bit more unrest or a different kind of unrest. And so there's that added element to this that, you know, maybe the governor is being cautious about. But so to answer your question, as far as we know, 500 National Guard troops. We don't know a number exactly of police who are in Kenosha, but they're coming from all over Wisconsin. And there are a lot of them there, as you saw on Tuesday night. And that's the best we know right now. I mean, that could change, but those are the numbers we have.
So that's sort of another facet of the debate, is sort of how much law enforcement presence is needed. I think a third facet that we touched on earlier is sort of a policy response to stuff like this. And as Laurel mentioned, the governor came out Monday calling a special session to pass a package of legislation. And we have some news that broke today about what's happening there in the legislature.
Kind of non-news news a little bit, but it threw us for a loop. Speaking for myself anyway.
It sure did for me.
I went for the head fake, definitely.
Yeah. So the news is that lawmakers are in the Senate anyway, are going to convene the session, but they're not going to be there. They're not going to vote on anything or debate anything. For a hot second today, we thought that the Senate was actually going to begin, that lawmakers were actually going to come in and debate proposals from the governor and from Senator Van Wongard, who's a Republican, who's put forward some bills. It took us about 5 minutes, 10 minutes to clarify that actually we misunderstood a statement from the senator's office and they are convening, but they're not, nobody's going to be there. They're not going to immediately adjourn, which is something that they had done for previous special sessions called by the governor. And Senator Fitzgerald says that, you know, he expects over the next several months, over the coming months, I think was kind of the phrase that he used, that lawmakers are going to come up with a number of proposals to vote on related to police and policing and policies. So the governor called the special session. I think there was doubt. We were sort of operating from a place of, and the governor said this, operating from a place of, we don't think Republicans are going to come in and do this. We had a little moment where we thought they were going to, and now we're kind of back to nothing's going to happen next Monday.
So even if Republicans aren't going to be taking it up, what is he actually asking for? What is in the package of legislation?
So this is a package of several bills that the governor unveiled actually in June, kind of, you know, in response to protests and conversations earlier this summer. Some of the proposals are pretty familiar to people that, you know, have been following protests and what activists have been asking for in Wisconsin and across the country. One of the bills would set a statewide standard for use of force policies for police officers. Another would create this database run by the State Department of Justice that would track use of force and some specific kind of demographic data from incidents. Another proposal would ban the use of chokeholds by police. Another one would ban no-knock warrants by police. So some familiar proposals there. There are also some kind of more, nitty-gritty requirements in terms of, you know, I think it's a certain number of hours annually that police have to do training on force. And there's also a $1 million grant program for violence prevention. So kind of a variety of things there in the package of bills that the governor is calling for and that Democrats have supported.
And meanwhile, Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald is asking for some other stuff that's not on that list.
Yeah, and that is, I guess, very different, you know, than what the governor's talking about and what certainly what protesters are talking about. One of the things that Fitzgerald said is that he'd like to see legislation developed that creates enhanced penalties for violence perpetrated against police, firefighters, and EMTs. Here's a quote from Fitzgerald from the statement, quote, "The riots in Kenosha in Madison this week further demonstrated that first responders are performing their public service duties at great risk to their personal safety." Fitzgerald also wants this package from State Senator Van Wongard to be considered. Van Wongard is a Republican from Racine and a retired police officer. There is stuff in the Wongard package that has some overlap with what Democrats have talked about, you know, like restrictions on when police can use chokeholds, for example. But there's also a bill in Wongard's package that would reduce state funding to local governments that reduce funding for police. So, you know, you've heard a lot this summer from Black Lives Matter protests. Look on the city's streets in Madison. You know, it's painted on the street, defund police. This has been a recurring message from the Black Lives Matter movement. And this is kind of the opposite of that. It's saying, like, look, if you defund police, we, the state, will defund you.
And so, like we said, Republicans are gaveling in, and we don't know when they're going to gavel out, but we also don't know if they're going to take up any of these specific proposals.
Yeah, I think that's about it right there.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when Senator Wongard in particular unveiled those proposals this week, he said that he didn't expect any votes on them until next year, until the next legislative session starts. So I think we're looking at, you know, a really unknown timeline for when these debates are going to happen on specific proposals and when the eventual votes come down to.
Well, I feel like there was just so much stuff this week that we barely even kind of scratched the surface. of it. I mean, there was all the stuff with professional sports. There's national politics surrounding it, but...
Oh, yeah. We didn't mention that the Milwaukee Bucks... You've probably heard this by now, but the Milwaukee Bucks, like, canceled the playoff game because of what happened. And they were calling for a special session of the legislature. I just cut you off, John, because I feel like we can't get out of the podcast without mentioning that. I've never seen that. I've never seen that ever in my life. A sports team on a playoff run canceling a game in the name of what's happening outside of the world of sports. Like, I've never seen that before.
Yeah, lots of crazy new stuff this week. But I guess we can leave it there for now. Sean Johnson is WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief.
Laurel White is WPR's Capitol Reporter.
And John K. Wilson is our resident politics nerd.
If you'd like to get new episodes of the WPR Politics Podcast delivered to you almost every single week, all you have to do is subscribe to the show. It's available on Apple Podcasts, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, and many other podcast apps. And while you're there, leave a rating or review of the show to help other people find it. And of course, all of our past episodes are available anytime at wpr.org/politicspodcast.